Hello, welcome to the 5280 podcast. Strap on and have a good time.
From the Mobile 5280 Studios, Weekend Geek Updates Special Report. Smurf here with a man who has guarded the cities through statuesque defiance. He's been the danger that flaps in the night. He is amazing. He is Victor Cook.
Oh, I wasn't sure who you were talking about. It's like, I'm looking around the room.
You're like, where? Who? I need to meet this guy. Victor, thank you so much for sitting down. Vic, I am, first of all, a huge fan. I was tearing my stuff apart trying to find my Demona action figure to have you sign it. You are the driving force behind two of my favorites, Darkwing Duck and Gargoyles.
Oh, wow. Thank you very much. Well, I can't say that I was a driving force. I was a storyboard artist in both of those shows.
That's a drive. You're telling the story. I was always upset at how Gargoyles didn't end. But, I mean, I always wanted more. When you were doing Gargoyles, was there more story to tell?
There was more story to tell. Greg Weisman is the man who created Gargoyles.
Mm-hmm.
And he did the first 52 episodes. And he definitely had more stories to tell, and he really wants to come back and do more. But you remember, they did another, I think, 13 episodes after that. Power went out, it's okay. That wasn't him. But there's definitely more stories to tell. People ask me about Gargoyles, and I got to tell you, it was a blur for me at the time.
Okay.
Because it was such so much work we had to do in such a shorter time. So in my role as a storyboard artist, it was just like, visualize it, get it done.
Wow. So you're like just in the storm and you're just trying to...
You're in the storm, and we were invited here, I think 4 years ago, to Denver Comic Con.
You were?
I think it was the 20th anniversary of Gargoyles. And Jonathan Frakes came, and Marina Sirtis came, and Greg Weisman, and all the key people on Gargoyles was there. And for some reason, he wanted me there, storyboard guy there. I was like, kind of had a mild panic attack, because I said, Greg, if somebody asks me, what do I remember about Gargoyles, it's like, I honestly could not remember any specific story, because it was just like, I got to get it done.
Right.
And I said, but you know what, I do kind of remember this. I remember all these gargoyles flying over New York in a big fight scene, and then they crash land on a roof, and the fight continued. And Greg just looked at me and said, Vic, that was every
episode. That's every episode, yeah.
So, anyway.
New York got trashed. I mean, the rooftops from those guys. They're protecting the city. No, they're remodeling roofs.
Yeah.
So you're currently working on Stretch Armstrong, and we'll get to that in a moment. But what – I mean – how do you get to do this dream job? Because I mean, in my mind, this is zenith work. I mean, you're doing storyboards. You're creating fantasies for children. Because I can tell you, a warm space in my heart, and I know there's thousands of people out there the same. I mean, how do you get here?
Well, currently I'm the executive producer and supervising director of Stretch Armstrong and the Flex Fighters, and before that, I was the supervising director and producer of The Spectacular Spider-Man, supervising director and producer of Mystery Incorporated. It's like a dream come true to even get those storyboard jobs early on.
Yeah.
But it's an extra dream come true to go from storyboard artist to become a director and a producer. It is really awesome. Do you want to hear how I got into the business?
Yes.
I don't want to bore everybody.
I don't think it's – that is not boring.
Well, it surprises a lot of people when I say I didn't set out to want to go into the animation business. I wanted to be a print cartoonist. I grew up on Marvel Comics. I grew up on comic strips. I'm a kid of the 60s.
Right.
And my artistic heroes growing up were Jack Kirby and Charles Schulz.
And it's hard to beat that. I mean, that's a hell of a range when you think about it.
And so I was all about, like, print cartooning, whether it be political cartoons or comic strips, comic books, greeting cards. I just wanted to do that. And I was the campus cartoonist in high school and junior high and all that kind of stuff, and in college. And my figure drawing classes in college, you know, you'd have the nude model, and I'd always add horns or a cape or something like that to the character, which doesn't make a lot of figure drawing teachers happy, but my instructor got what I wanted to do,
mm-hmm.
and she had said one of her former students, this is 1980, by the way, it's a long time ago, she said one of her former students was at Hanna-Barbera, I should look him up, gave me his name and number, I wrote it in a book, and I just like had no intention of calling him. And it sounds crazy when I tell people this, but because I read a biography of my hero, Jack Kirby, and one of his first jobs was at the Fleischer Studios working on Betty Boop and the Popeye cartoons.
Right.
And he described it as like car factory work, where somebody draws this hand on the left, and then somebody draws this hand on the far right, and your job is to draw the hand in the middle so it creates the illusion of movement. It was like grunt work, he said. He didn't want to do it. So that was...
So it painted a bad picture in your mind.
Painted a bad picture. I didn't look into it. Anyway, cut to 5 years later. I'm still trying to sell a comic strip. It's not happening. I'm working at the Costa Mesa Daily Pilot as a graphic artist and kind of selling a political cartoon once a week to them for $50 a pop. And like, maybe I should look this guy up.
Maybe finally, it's time to break down.
Finally. And I called him, and he turned me on to our animation guild that does these professional classes at night. And I took a couple classes. An instructor one night said, Filmation. Does anyone remember Filmation, by the way? Filmation is looking for in-betweeners. So I called them. They had me take a test. And then they hired me.
Wow.
I mean, it's crazy. And they, you know, you go to an TV animation studio these days, and it's like everybody's mixed up. A writer might sit next to a background artist, next to a character designer. But in those days, it was very much by departments.
Right. Segregated.
Bottom floor was color key and in-betweeners, and the next floor layout, and the top floor was storyboard and directors, and they toured me the studio, and I got to the top floor, and I saw these storyboards, back then still done on paper, three panels on a page. It looked like a comic strip to me.
Right.
Hey, I want to do that. I want to hopefully get promoted and do that. Went back and signed up for those classes, and took some storyboard classes with the intention of trying to move up. I was so naive about the business. You know, when I got hired, I thought I'd be there for 30 years.
Right.
I didn't know it was project to project. And about a year and a half into it, Filmation didn't have another show sold, so people were getting laid off. But luckily, I had these samples, and I showed it to the next place and got hired.
So you've just been leapfrogging after that.
I mean, I luckily had samples. I wasn't planning on the lab, but luckily had samples. And then I got some board experience on that first job, which was Alf and Alftales. And those boards got me into Disney TV animation as a revision artist.
Wow.
And the first show I was on, they had told me, you're going to do revisions for 2 years before you get a chance to board.
Okay. Right?
But then somebody left. I was there 2 weeks and somebody left. They said, well, just try Vic out. I had a 6-week trial to do a board. I did it. They liked it. And they put me under contract to be a storyboard artist.
Wow.
So far, everything seems like an accident.
Boom, boom,
right?
Boom, boom.
anyway, the producer of that show, the showrunner, did this pep talk to the crew about how everyone should learn a little bit about what other people do on the show.
All right.
Production guys learn what the writers learn what the designers do, et cetera, et cetera. I really took it to heart. I signed up for a UCLA extension class in script writing with no intention to want to be a writer. It was just really, hey, I'm going to learn what those guys do. And they were Darkwing Duck was starting. And part of the assignment is to write a spec script. So I wrote a Darkwing spec just for the class.
Right.
But then after the class, I overhear some guys working on Darkwing Duck, some writers and story editors saying, hey, we got picked up for a bazillion episodes, syndication, ABC, Disney, everywhere. We're looking for stories. I go, well, I got what I did in class.
Here you go.
And they looked at it. I go, yeah, we like that. We're going to let you write that. And then eventually, down the road, I got to actually storyboard on the show I wrote. And the executive producer and creator of Darkwing Duck, his name is Tad Stones. And mm-hmm. We're friends now. But at the time, he's the big shot.
Yeah, you're just
producer.
The kid.
I'm the peon. That I don't think he ever even said good morning to me. My memory of him is just walking down the hallway.
Grunting.
Really fast. He's going to a meeting. He's meeting with the executives. You know, I'm too small. But after I... After my script and the storyboard on my script, I get a knock on my door, and it's Tad. And he, in his booming voice, you know, Vic, you know, we're really happy with your storyboard, your visual storytelling, you know, and the gags. You know, you have a really understanding of it. And I'm impressed by the initiative you took in writing the script. It tells us you understand story structure, blah, 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 blah. And he said, have you ever thought about directing? Now,
well, that's a pay grade increase right there.
So now if he's listening to this, he's hearing this for the first time. At the time, I thought, I have my dream job. I'm storyboarding at Disney.
You know, it gets better than this.
The EP says, Vic, have you ever thought about directing? So I was smart enough to say, yeah, I've been thinking about directing.
Funny you mention it.
Funny you mention it. I've been thinking about it for like eons now. And I think he was very instrumental in me getting my next directing job because I think he talked me up to the executive.
Pushed you up there.
And then soon, not too long after, I got my first directing job on 101 Dalmatians and just had a run of shows at Disney.
Hits. Not just shows, hits.
And I got to work on a variety of things. Mm-hmm. You know, cartoony and action, 101 Dalmatians, Buzz Lightyear, Legend of Tarzan, Atlantis, Mickey's Clubhouse. And
hits.
And around the time of Mickey's Clubhouse, I was kind of going through a bit of my version of a midlife crisis.
Okay.
So I'm kind of in my early 40s and thinking, God, I haven't done a superhero show. And this is before I had anyone thought Disney would ever buy Marvel.
I never thought that would happen.
And so Tad gets a job producing two Hellboy DVDs, and he asks me to direct one of them, so I take it. And that job directly led to me being hired on The Spectacular Spider-Man, which then led to me getting Scooby-Doo Mystery Incorporated, which then led to me coming to Hasbro to do Stretch Armstrong and the Flex Fighters. So, yeah, it's been
Wow. That's quite the ride.
People's listening like this guy just fell into everything, but, you know.
Hey, sometimes it is literally who you know.
Who you know, but you know what? It's also being prepared when the door knocks. So, you know, like taking that storyboard class, mm-hmm. not knowing where we're going to get laid off, I had samples, you know.
Yeah.
Taking that writing class, and it was really just to learn what those guys do.
And it could help you with your presentation. Okay, yeah. I know how they're going to write. I can help visualize what I'm putting down on my board.
In hindsight, I wish I had the strategy to plan it. I'm going to take a writing class because this will help me to direct. I didn't think that way. I just look back and realize it worked out that way.
Now, so when you're doing Darkwing Duck, who there are two characters in the Duck verse that I always think are so underutilized, which was Darkwing and Gizmo Duck. Those are my two favorites, and I think so underrated that a couple of years ago, it's the year you were at the con, I started a rumor mm-hmm. that they were going to do a live action Darkwing Duck. Now this got a lot more traction than I honestly thought it would. But now everyone's like coming back to me. Did you hear? They're doing a Darkwing Duck live action. And I'm like, no. Are they doing a live action?
I have not heard anything about it. But although I think it would make a great CG movie if somebody wants to do it. But Darkwing's back. He's come back. You know, they did a reboot of DuckTales.
They did, and I haven't watched it.
Launchpad's on it, Gizmo Duck's on it, and recently Darkwing Duck has returned.
Yes, and I was so excited to see that. Now, do you have any say, or are you part of that universe anymore?
No, I'm not
anymore?
Part of that at all. You know, it's all different producers and directors. I know they consult with Tad. I think they consult with Tad.
Right.
I know Tad's been involved with the comic book.
Mm-hmm.
But
the comic book is great. They actually identify who Huey, Dewey, and Louie's mother is in the comic. And I'm like, oh my God. That makes it's amazing to see.
You know, I'm a fan, you know, I'm now starting on this new Disney Junior show called mm-hmm. Tots, which will be out in 2019. And ever since I started back on this Disney show, after being away from Disney for 10 years, this muscle memory has kicked in to where every time I'm near a whiteboard or something, I'm like drawing Darkwing Duck or Baloo the Bear. I'm like drawing these old characters. Like, what is wrong with me? It's like it's the memories are coming back.
What's that nervous twitch? Because you know when you're in high school or college, you always got that one doodle you're always doing. Yours is Darkwing Duck, obviously.
Yeah.
Who is your favorite character out of the Disneyverse and what you've worked on?
Okay, somebody asked me this. What was my favorite shows?
No, I won't even get you that. We'll just narrow it down to characters. Characters are easy. Shows are complicated.
My favorite character in the Disney universe, as a fan,
mm-hmm.
boy, I cannot name just one.
But wow.
So I have to go answer it this way. As a storyboard artist,
mm-hmm.
to storyboard, the two most fun shows for me were Darkwing Duck and Gargoyles.
Mm-hmm.
And they're such radically different shows, obviously.
Yes.
But Darkwing Duck, you know, it was a wacky show, but it was a superhero show.
It was.
You know, so you know, all of us on the show, Tad and the writers and the directors and the storyboard artists, we just grew up on the silver age of comic books, and a lot of that got put into the show. And plus, it was wacky. It wasn't serious. So it was
right.
So fun. And it was this sort of this golden age of TV animation at Walt Disney TV Animation, where everybody was under contract.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a time of our lives where nobody worried about project to project, like my Filmation story.
Right.
Because it's almost like we joined the military. We're here for 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like you just solely focus on the creative fun of it. You weren't sort of like angling or worried about your next thing or what's going to happen.
Right. You just, what's the next episode?
Pure fun. Pure right. fun. So creatively fun, and just your life was fun. And then the people you worked with, it's so stupid. There was a little cadre of guys, storyboard guys and character designers, me, Greg Guler, Dave Schwartz, there was a few of us. And I swear, we'd go to lunch every day, and it was like Groundhog Day, because we would talk about the next Batman movie. The same conversation every day at lunch. Or the next Star Trek movie. Mm-hmm. This is the 90s, right?
Yep.
And then Gargoyles was... It wasn't as freewheeling, as fun as Darkwing. It was more interesting fun because it was like using a different muscle.
But there was a higher story arc that was always going on with that.
Well, you know, it was like you were trying to emulate live action in mm-hmm. your staging, in your action with it. So and you're drawing a little bit more realistic characters. So it was harder. So it was interesting. It was less of a social fun of working with people, but it was more of an intellectual creative juices. Okay, I'm trying something different. This is so different than anything I've worked on at Disney for years. And I kind of think it helped me when I went on to do Spider-Man and Scooby and Stretch, because you're thinking in that sort of cinematic mode.
Right.
You know.
So when you're, because you and I spoke a lot yesterday before we did this podcast, because you're huge into comics. You're much more fluent than I would have guessed, because when you say that a lot of the Silver Age comes through in Darkwing, I didn't think about it until our conversation yesterday. I'm like, wow, that is, with Negaduck, with Darkwing, all of that is the Golden Age, Silver Age
yeah.
comics at the time. Who were you reading? I mean, what got your comic bug? What was it?
Well, you know, my dad got me into comic books. My dad was in the Air Force guy, but my dad was a kid during the 40s, right? So my dad, and he loved Milton Caniff and Terry and the Pirates and all of mm-hmm. that era. And I think if there was a different sort of lifestyle or environment for him, maybe he would have gone out to be a cartoonist himself, you know. But he bought me my first comic books, Justice League, you know. I think it was described – I can't remember the issue. I was describing the cover.
No, I was actually like, looking for it, too.
It was like faces on the cover would be like half Batman, half Penguin, half – Flash, half Captain Boomerang, whatever. Mm-hmm. It's like all on the. That was the first one. It's like, oh my god, all these superheroes in one comic book, you know. But like Superman stories where Red Kryptonite makes his head big, or you know, all those kind of things.
The crazy
Love
stuff.
That. Mm-hmm. And then Marvel. Marvel was in the middle of its Silver Age, in the middle of the '60s when I was 6 years old. You
yep.
know? And you know, we were also talking about this yesterday. What was great about comics back then, especially the Marvel comics back then, is to me they were written all ages.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, 6-year-old me really got into those comic books.
Yeah.
But I know from every article I've ever read and through anecdotes that college kids at the time were into the Marvel comic books as like any science fiction.
Yeah.
And so maybe some of those things were a little over a kid's head, but there was nothing inappropriate for a no. kid.
It and made him question. It made him understand
exactly.
more.
Exactly. And it was interesting for an older person. Mm-hmm. Today, I feel like comics are here's the ones for kids, and here's the ones for the older people.
Yeah.
You know.
And it's kind of disappointing that we've dumbed it down, that instead of just continue to keep it at a yeah. at a constant. With that in mind, how much of your childhood thoughts did you bring to Spectacular Spider-Man? Because I watched that cartoon. I've always watched the Spideys. I loved them. The X-Men's, but the Spidey cartoons are you know, huge, huge love for. What did you bring to the Spectacular that you're like, I need this for sure?
I got
to
tell you, so that original show was big for me, the 67 show, right?
Mm-hmm.
The theme song, right?
Spider-Man, yes.
Exactly. So it's like that, you're going to have fun watching that show.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be action-packed, but it's going to be fun. So that's what I wanted. That's what we all of us working on the Spectacular Spider-Man wanted on our show. So that's why we have our theme song. It's like our version of that, right? We wanted the fun. Also, on the visual side of things, I really wanted to see Ditko imagery in the show. You know, like if you look at those old Ditko comics, like you'd see if he's Peter Parker and he's remembering something that happened to Spider-Man, half the face. Spidey mask, mm-hmm. right? When he had Spidey sense, there was no special, super fancy special effects. It was squiggle lines above mm-hmm. his head. At the end of the story, when he'd walk off all alone because he couldn't pay the rent or whatever, the skyline above Manhattan would be red with spider webs. Mm-hmm. We knew that was symbolic. It wasn't literally there were spider webs there. I wanted to do that in our show. And we did that in our show. And
quite successfully.
There were some questions at first. You know, we had some network executives, like when they saw the webs in the sky on the storyboard, like, oh, you can't do that. Kids are going to wonder who put that there. It's like, no, they're not. It's in the comic books.
It's in the comics. They'll figure it out.
So just wanted this exuberant feeling of fun when you watch The Spectacular Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing, though, that I didn't see in the 60s that I wanted to see was, because, things are created of their time, I wanted to see some diversity in the show.
Right.
And so, and Greg Wiseman, who is the writer-producer of Spectacular, also, if you go back and look at Gargoyles, that's just always in Greg's mindset. Keith David was Goliath.
Mm-hmm.
The woman he loved was half American Montoya. Indian, half African American.
Mm-hmm.
So Greg just thinks of New York as it is, diverse, and so our
that is New York.
So we went in and we had a conversation of like, okay, it doesn't affect anyone's personality. It's just what they look like, mm-hmm. right? So Liz Allen became half Hispanic.
Mm-hmm.
Ned Leeds, we changed his last name to Lee, right? You know, those little things. And here we are, 10 years later, I look at Spider-Man Homecoming, and I see a lot of that in there.
And it translates a lot. Because, yeah. I mean, as far as how they're trying to mix him into the students, and that Mary Jane ends up, uh-huh. the chick, you're like, wait a minute, Mary Jane's a redhead, and MJ, and you're like, oh my God. So how they did it, I almost think they did take your page from your playbook to do that.
Maybe they did, or maybe they just were thinking along the same as us, coincidentally. You know, the other things I wanted to do visually is I wanted some over-the-top action scenes.
Mm.
So I would study these old, all the animated Spider-Mans, and what I noticed is, yeah, he shot webs, he swung on webs like Tarzan, and he'd web up bad guys like they're in a fishnet, and he'd punch them, but it wasn't clever. And by then, the two Sam Raimi movies had come out. Mm-hmm. They were so impressive. It's like, God, we've got to do that. And we're in a TV animation budget, but we got to do that.
Right.
And make these action sequences be interesting and long and fun. And so we just worked really hard to bring that fun. You know, like the first action sequence that we did was for the promo. We did the show.
The pilot.
And I did not want Spider-Man to punch anybody at all. In the sequence, it's a rooftop sequence where these guys are trying to get in the helicopter, but people are getting knocked in the head and things. But he's not punching them; he's just webbing things and pulling them in the head, or webbing two guys and clunking them together. And so that was a huge fun to do. That's what we wanted to bring, just fun to the Spectacular Spider-Man.
Who was your favorite villain Spidey battle to storyboard and to choreographer, be choreograph and all of that?
Okay. They're all great and fun. And by the way, I didn't do it all myself.
I'm sure you had team.
We had episode directors that were fantastic, and storyboard artists. So, props to everyone. It was a big team effort. I would say some of my favorite fights were like the thug fights, believe it or not. If you look at the prologue of show 13,
right,
our season finale, there is just that. It was from the promo, the thug fight. That's just fun and clever. But I love also the Sinister Six fight in Central Park. I love the Sandman fight. I love
the Sandman fight.
It's hard for me to pick one. There were moments I liked in the first episode with the enforcers,
right,
who are not super powered, but when I mentioned fun, it's like Spider-Man, he's Peter Parker. When he puts the mask on, it allows him to be someone else. He's mm-hmm. a smartass, right? I felt that was the one thing I don't remember being pulled off in the Raimi movies was the smart alecky
no,
Peter.
It wasn't.
So
he was almost too insecure
yeah.
when he, because that wasn't the Spidey. The Andrew Garfield Spidey was the, what I wanted
exactly.
to see.
Exactly, he did it.
Yes.
So we wanted that smart alecky Spider-Man to also come through in the way he fought. So when Ox gets him in a bear hug in episode one, I think it was scripted that either Spider-Man elbowed or kicked Ox in the shin or something to get free, but we decided. I directed that episode. That no, well, I'm going to have Spider-Man web Ox's handlebar mustache and yank on it.
Oh.
You know, and it's just like it just fit the character. You know.
So now you're still in animation, and now you're being crossed over into Netflix, which is an entirely different animal. And I was thinking last night, Stretch Armstrong, who childhood toy. I mean, that thing ended up becoming a solid brick, oh, you know, ages ago. I have no idea where it is, but, you know, it was a character that you stretched out. How did you come to the story, like, out of a toy from the 70s?
Well, you know, Hasbro had been trying to crack the nut of developing that property.
For years, I'm sure.
Some sort of a character and story for years. You know, you probably heard of years ago there was an announcement of a live action movie,
mm-hmm.
and they were trying. So there is a little bit of a Spectacular Spider-Man connection. So our executive on the Spectacular Spider-Man after the show ended got picked up by Hasbro as the executive. Yeah, and he gave me a call. Actually, somebody called ahead of him and said he would like to talk to you.
Okay.
This boys' action show. Are you free tomorrow? Yeah. Can you tell me what it is? No, he'll tell you tomorrow. So I had 24 hours to like, gee, I wonder if it's another Transformers. Wow, maybe it's a G.I. Joe reboot.
Right.
Maybe it's wrong.
Well, yeah,
maybe
you can start.
Micronauts. I'm thinking like all the cool stuff, right?
Right.
So luckily we weren't Skyping. We get in the full phone and I go, what is it? And he goes, Stretch Armstrong. And I was like, I bought, drop the phone. You know, like, what? You know, like, are you serious?
Not the relaunch I was
and,
thinking.
But, you know, it was like an eternity of that in my head.
Right.
But it was really, maybe 2 seconds went by. And he goes, Vic, it's a blank slate. We have to keep the name Stretch Armstrong. He's got to be able to stretch. But other than that, it's not the old toy. It's a blank slate to create a brand new show.
Wow.
And a brand new superhero universe. And they hired these two writers, Kevin Burke and Doc Wyatt,
mm-hmm.
and we got together and we like developed this show. And it was a chance for the three of us to develop the kind of superhero show that we had always wanted to see ourselves.
So it's basically the fans finally getting, okay, it's a toy line, here's the check, just make it good.
Yeah, and you know, there's some challenges, right?
I mean, of course.
The challenges is the prejudice of people, if they were fans of that toy, mm-hmm. thinking, well, why aren't you just making that toy?
Right.
Or people remembering that toy, like, well, that seems goofy, and thinking our show is going to be that, because they don't know what it is yet, right?
Right.
We knew what we had, and we knew it was going to be really cool. And it was a chance to do things from scratch from the get-go that some of these properties that were created in comics years ago you couldn't do, so... it's going to be set in this big city like Chicago or New York or L.A., and so we could be diverse from the beginning. It was no more, let's change the ethnicity of somebody.
Right.
Let's just do it.
You can establish it.
Right, but we were creating personalities first. I mean, we were just mixing them. Who could be this guy, you know? The other fun challenge was like rethinking the stretching powers themselves, because that was other kind of like a little bump for me in the beginning. Like,
mm-hmm.
Oh, but there's already Mr. Fantastic, and we've seen
Plastic Man,
Elastic Girl, and
yeah.
But it was like, okay, let's think of it like a little bit backwards or opposite. So those stretchy guys can stretch their arms out like 20 feet, and they just can stay there if they wanted to,
mm-hmm.
and then they can retract it. But what if our guy was more like a rubber band or a bungee cord? Something has to stretch him, whether it's gravity or centrifugal force. But once that gives, it's going to snap back. He has to snap back. He can't hold the stretch.
Right.
So, hey, that gives him limitations, and that was a big key for the choreography. So that's how we played stretch. And then it was, you know, the marching orders we got from Hasbro at first was going to be Stretch.
Mm-hmm.
We want a team, two guys and a girl. And they all have variations of the stretching power because they all got exposed by the same chemical.
Right.
So, spoiler alert, if you guys haven't watched the show on Netflix, watch it because I'm going to tell you some stuff that's already happened on season one, which has been on since November.
Yeah. So I think everyone's so binged to this. Yeah.
But so, you know, wingspan Nathan Park, he can sort of stretch out his side so they're like squirrel wings and he can fly.
Right.
And Omnimass, who Ricardo can sort of expand his fists or his feet like a squishy toy and change his mass. And that was his. And we were stumped on the fourth stretching power. We were like, what's the fourth one? You know, for the female character.
Right.
And we couldn't think of it. But we had this character called Blindstrike, this mercenary masked sort of henchman for Dr. C, whose weaponry and armor were weaponized Flexarium. In other words, it was a weaponized version of the thing that gave them their power.
Oh.
So in a way, she was like she's like the Boba Fett version of gadgets and stuff.
Right.
And we go, you know what? What if that was a girl? What if that was a female? Oh my gosh. And we had already this cast of characters in high school students. So we had this character named Raya Doshti who was at their school. And we go, God, what if that's Raya? You know, and so the fourth member of the team you don't realize is even the fourth member of the team until episode 12. Up until episode 12, you think this person's a bad guy. And the other one is you think it's a guy.
Nice little switcheroo.
You don't even think it's a gal.
That is awesome.
I'm sorry if I messed it up for you out there, but it was really fun to do, you know, and to play with kind of those perceptions and stereotypes. You know, we've been on the playground as kids and probably heard the you run like a girl or mm-hmm. you fight like a girl, and Blindstrike kicks ass. So it's a compliment on this show.
You're like, thanks. I appreciate that. What's it like working for Netflix? I mean, because it's an entirely different platform because you have to be completely finished. It's not, you know, staging anything. It's done and it's all out there.
Yeah, you deliver a whole season all at once for Netflix. I'd say in a lot of ways the process was not that different from the last three or four shows I've worked on.
Okay.
I mean, if you think about even Gargoyles back in the 90s, it was an ongoing story. It was almost a bingeable show before people thought of it, right?
Right.
And The Spectacular Spider-Man was the same way. Mystery Incorporated was the same way. Mm-hmm. This is all before Netflix. So as far as the storytelling, it was like of that. It was already, it's bingeable. So, but the working with Netflix was great because they were so supportive of what we wanted to do as creators and as writers and directors with the show. They were just such great partners to work with. It was awesome.
I love their, because, I mean, their Voltron series is spectacular. I'm mm-hmm. so hooked on that thing. I'm waiting for the next Castlevania mm-hmm. series. The Stretch Armstrong, I was so surprised when I watched it. I'm like, oh my God, this is fantastic. Yeah, it is amazing.
We had a blast. I mean, they what's great with them is they like to try new things mm-hmm. at Netflix. So, and we kind of had mapped out already our second season. And they said, hey, we'd like to do an interactive special.
Oh, wow.
And so we sort of then took what would have been our first three episodes of our second season, which hasn't come on yet,
mm-hmm.
and made that into this interactive sort of choose your own adventure special. So that was all Netflix's idea to do.
Wow.
And it was a challenge to do, but it was like really, really fun. I mean, the script that Kevin and Doc wrote was like a telephone book. And there's like, I think, so many different story paths, you know. In this one special, you get like so many different episodes, so many different outcomes. And as different as all those outcomes are and different story paths are, it's all canon to the show. It all hooks up from season one to season two.
So it all matters.
It all matters and all matches.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. That is a work.
It was a blast to do, you know. fantastic. But it was a little bit like Groundhog's Day because, you know, some of these choice points would be almost
over.
The same,
mm-hmm.
but kind of different. So it was kind of a challenge to keep track of that. And the three directors who worked on the episodes, they were sequence directors on this. So we each took a section to make sure it would all hook up.
Right.
And It was really, really fun.
So last question, and then I'll let you go. Actually, two questions, because I have a question that we ask all of our celebrity guests. Is there a story that you didn't get to do on any of the shows that you really wish that you could go back and do?
Gosh, I say on the Spectacular Spider-Man, there were probably about 3 more seasons of stories.
Wow, that many?
Yeah, we kind of got cut short. You know, we on that show wanted to take Peter all the way through at least high school graduation.
Well, and that's what I honestly thought where it would end. That, you know, you'd get up to college, and that would be.
That's what we were going to do. If you watch most shows, it's this nebulous same time of year all the time. If you watch Spectacular, we start in September.
And you actually have seasons.
Yeah, at the end of the first season, it's New Year's, and then we start next. Season 2, it's January, it's snowing.
Yep.
And then it goes until just before spring. So, yeah, we had a lot more to go. So I really wish we could have done more of that. But I'd say the rest of it, no, I feel like we've told what we wanted to tell. Stretch Armstrong. I can't wait for everyone to see Season 2. It's going to come out later this fall.
I was going to say, when are we going to see Season 2?
I can't say until Netflix announces it. I can't give you the exact date. I do know it. All I can say is it'll be out this year.
Okay, that's good, though.
It'll be out later this year. And it gets darker. It gets deeper. You're going to know more about these characters and what makes them tick. And, you know, if there was a theme for our first season, it's don't judge a book by its cover. And we continue that into Season 2.
Excellent. I'm looking forward to it. Final question, two questions. If anyone wants to follow you at home or keep track of what you got coming up or what's going on, what's the best way to keep a pulse on you?
Best way to keep track is follow me on Twitter. And my Twitter name is Victor_Cook1, the number one. And I, every other day, post something about Stretch. Usually on Thursdays, Throwback Thursdays, I'll post an old clip of a show I've worked on in the past, whether it be a Darkwing Duck or Gargoyles or Spectacular Spider-Man or Scooby or something like that. And I post some crew pics every so often of the new show, Tots. Can't really post anything about the show yet.
Not yet.
But just pictures of us. Just
goofing off.
Yeah, there's one of me and one of the directors, Chris, and we took a break from talking about Tots and just started sketching on the whiteboard. Of course, like I said earlier, I was like
Darkwing. Here we go,
doodling all the old stuff. And he was an animator on James and the Giant Peach, and he was doodling that. And but yeah, Twitter is the best way.
All right, and finally, Vic. Of these three characters, these people, who do you think plays the best villain? We have Tim Curry, we have Alan Rickman, and Christopher Walken.
Alan Rickman and Die Hard.
Oh, yes. Alan Rickman actually is kicking everyone's ass in this fall. It's hard. I mean, if him and his brother had gotten together in Die Hard, no contest. Yeah. John McClane, who? Vic, thank you so much for sitting in with us. I know you've got to go. Hopefully we will see you again soon on the podcast.
This was a lot of fun. Anytime you want to talk, give me a call. I'd love to.
Excellent. Because in the end, we're all stories, so make it a good one.